When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I did what I did for the good of the realm.
The realm? Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie.
But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder. Many who try to climb it fail, but never get to try again. The fall breaks them. And some are given a chance to climb. They refuse. They cling to the realm. Or the gods. Or love. Illusions. Only the ladder is real. The climb is all there is.
Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Grace, and this is Game of Microphones, Episode 2.
Woo, Episode 1's not even on iTunes yet. I hate when you first put out a podcast, you don't know when it's going to go up. It just kills me.
It takes a few days.
Yeah. So to keep this in Game of Thrones style, we killed all the other hosts, and it's just going to be us two.
We have prevailed. Dun, dun, dun. We wear the crown.
You sound different from last episode.
Why? Because it's my audio is not messed up.
We had some technical difficulties, to be expected. Okay, so before, there's one thing I didn't explain last time that I wanted to go over real quick that you probably caught the gist if you listened to episode one, people who are listening. But we do, instead of just like recapping each episode when the season starts, we'll do top five highlights. And basically, we'll each pick just things about the episode that we want to talk about that we found particularly interesting. It doesn't necessarily have to be things that we even like, but, and it can be themes, it can be specific events, things we notice, whatever. That way, it's more like just having a conversation about the episode rather than telling you what you already watched beat by beat, which I can't stand when other podcasts do that, to be honest.
Now that I've gotten used to your format, I'm like all about that.
Although I have to admit, there are some other podcasts that do that, but they really get a lot of juice out of each beat, so it works pretty well. But I like to be able to jump around.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Our first episode was more of a broad overview, but I went back and listened. So we're going to play, this is a segment from Walking Dead cast that we recorded in 2013, right after season 3 wrapped, but it's much more detailed. You know, we picked more specific moments from season 3, and it's, I think it's a little bit more in depth. I listened to it today and I totally loved it. So I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I did. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Okay, let's move on to the main course of today's podcast, Game of Thrones Season 3. It will be totally spoilery, so if you haven't seen that, you should not listen.
Okay, gentlemen, who wants to go first?
You do.
All right, yeah. I'll go first. My number five is, it's actually a zombie kill. I thought the zombie kill of Season 3 was when Sam kills the White Walker. I loved it. I thought that was an amazing zombie kill because... I've never read the book, that particular book, but it looked like that the zombie was made of ice or something.
That was not a zombie. That was a White Walker. A White Walker.
Yeah.
The zombies are the whites.
Yes.
So here's where we've talked before is the White Walkers are the creators of the zombies, and the zombies are people that used to be people, but now they're the minions of the White Walkers.
Okay.
But you're talking about when he killed the White Walker, right? And I thought... That was a little too...
Yes.
It made it seem too easy, but then later on he said there's a... I guess it was the blade
he had. Dragon glass.
That's why.
Yeah, glass, which is obsidian. And as was pointed out in that episode, I believe episode 10, that nobody's killed a White Walker in thousands of years. And here's the coward.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, Jon Snow killed it. Killed one. Or did
no,
he kill a
he
zombie?
Killed a white. He killed a white.
Oh.
Which is a zombie. And those you kill with fire.
Okay.
But fire won't do squat to a White Walker.
So it's actually made a point of saying yes. This cowardly character is the first one to have done it.
So the fact that Dragon Glass was able to kill the White Walker.
Yeah.
Means something, I think.
That may be important.
It answers the question of why the huge cache of Dragon glass was found north of the wall.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of it buried in there.
Sam was the one who found it.
Yeah, why is this here?
So I'm thinking that maybe Dany with her dragons might come in handy if you ever have to fight off the White Walkers.
That'll be in season 14. Okay, next.
David.
My number five is the general ambiguity of some of the characters. So I like that characters can be complex in this show and not fall neatly into good or evil. I think in a lot of shows, most characters fall into good or evil. Sometimes you're deceived about which one they are for a while. You're not sure which they are.
Littlefinger.
But these are genuinely mixed characters. And I mean Jaime Lannister, the Kingslayer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. After a while, you have to say... he definitely did some bad things.
Sure.
He's not all warm and cuddly, but he's not all bad. He did some good things,
and you can kind
of
understand why he did some of the things that you thought were just unequivocally bad before.
Right. And then,
I can't understand why did he throw Bran out the window?
That's one of the things that's pretty clearly
that's
not
one
so
of the
great.
Bad things. Yeah.
Right. But he has this terrible reputation because he killed the king, and it turns out he actually was maybe doing a service to the people by killing the Mad King.
Right.
Plus he started to take care of Brienne, which
he came back and saved
really
her.
Got you empathizing with him.
Right. So I mean he's genuinely a mixed character, and I think we come to see that the Hound is a genuinely mixed character.
Yeah.
He's a badass. He's killed a lot of people, but on the other hand he has some sympathy for the less powerful. He saved both of the Stark daughters at one time or another. So I like that those things can coexist and you can make up your own mind what you think about the person.
Right on. One of the things this season brought forward that it was always so great for me was the fact that two of my favorite characters have always been Jaime and Sandor Clegane for that very reason. And up until this season, I say that and people looked at me like I was some evil bastard for saying I think Jaime's a great character. I don't think he's a great person, but he's a great character. He has an actual genuine arc.
Yeah.
But... going back to my number five now, I'm just going to refer to it as Peter Drunkledge. the Tyrion-Sansa wedding and Tyrion's extraordinarily drunk performance during the wedding and then his wonderful performance after the wedding when they were there in their bedroom chambers together, I thought was probably his best performance of the season in a season that saw a very diminished Tyrion as a major character. You know, he was pushed a little bit to the side, but along with his character, we also got one of the great things, again, for book readers, that we get a lot of nods to the books without being explicit, that there were some changes, but they worked, such as early on, I believe in episode one or two of the season, Cersei makes a comment to him about, I had heard that your nose got cut off. And he says, oh, no, no, that was just an exaggeration. Now, in the book, my apologies for saying that, his nose is cut off, half of it. He's right. He's a hideous monster at this point where he's ugly to begin with, but now he's scarred and has no nose. The fact that they couldn't do that for this show but still give a nod to it, and that he played it off wonderfully even with this big scar, but then that drunk scene of him at the wedding and stopping Joffrey from doing what he was doing, got to give the nod to Tyrion early on.
Do you think he was playing drunk, or do you think he was actually drunk?
He's a professional. I'm pretty sure he was playing drunk, but he does it so well.
And I think there are the requirements of television coming in here because...
Tyrion was asking, was Tyrion drunk?
Oh, yes. I don't think Tyrion was that drunk. I think part of it was playing drunk because he was really trying to make sure
like
that...
he's like an alcoholic.
No, no, I think he was 100% drunk.
Miserable at everything, and like, I'm going to fucking drink.
Yeah.
one thing about that scene, and there was another scene, you know, where Joffrey went up to Tywin, mm-hmm. and people are challenging him more, and he's not just chopping off all their heads and killing them all the time anymore. He is some, but it makes me feel like he's a little diminished this season. And as much as I hated him before, I'm starting to be like, come on, Joffrey, you going to take that? You should be killing this guy. Like, you should be chopping off Tyrion's head right now.
Don't say that to Roz.
Yeah, like I say, not always.
But there's a little... requirements of TV creeping in there that I'm sure the producers realize that half of America's in love with Peter Dinklage, so they didn't want to make him too hideous.
And yes, that person sitting right here.
But it was also a matter of hours spent in a makeup chair that they said, that would just be too expensive.
Is he like that from the start in the book?
No, during the Battle of the Blackwater. When I forget who it was that tried to kill him. He slices off his nose. I mean, he was ugly to begin with, and by this point in the books, he is this really hideous monster.
And the scar now just makes him hotter.
Well, I'm actually surprised they didn't do that. Yeah, I guess it's. I would imagine it's not because of the requirement, or it's not because people are in love with Dinklage, because they're so edgy on the show. Yeah, I think it's correct.
I mean, this is the show that refuses to show a battle scene because it's too expensive.
Yeah,
you know.
But I mean, it's so lavishly produced. It's an expensive show to even do what they do, but I wish they could do everything. Yeah. Okay.
I'm glad they don't. I'm glad they didn't show him, try to like give him a prosthetic hideous face because he's so fabulous.
Well, and people always think about special effects, but the biggest expense in a show is the actors, and this show has a lot of actors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Although not a giant amount of famous actors.
They're getting there.
And a show gets more expensive as it goes along. Well,
Sean Bean was the most well-known one. What happened to him.
Yeah. Kieran Hunt.
That's probably why. They're like, well, he's going to die anyway. Why don't we get somebody really expensive?
Exactly.
They've got Kieran Hines, and he's pretty well-known, but they've barely shown him. He's one of the Northmen.
Mance Rayder.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, right.
And they barely showed him.
The King of the North. We've seen him, two? Three times, maybe.
For like a minute
each? A total of 2 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was $100,000.
Right, right. And another gorgeous, majestic scene that probably cost them a lot of money is climbing up the wall.
Yeah.
That whole scene of climbing up the wall. No, that's actually not my number four, but I just thought I'd bring it up.
You know they filmed that at Mission Cliffs in San Francisco? No.
my number four, actually, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, is the Jaime Brienne journey together. Yeah. I thought it was so beautiful. And I do. Jaime is partially redeemed in my eyes, for sure. He's a complicated guy, and he's got a lot of amazing things inside of him. And he's also still a killer, or a would-be killer, and a jerk. But he kind of pushes Brienne's buttons and pushes Brienne's buttons, but I think right now she is quite fond of him. And he did save her from the bear pit, which I love that scene.
Would you want them to get together?
No.
No, because you think he's too much of a jerk for her?
I think he really belongs to his sister.
There you go. Well, no, that's the one true love of this entire series.
Wait, so it ended, he came and said... hi, and she saw him, but we didn't see anything after that yet, right? in the series.
It was fairly, it was a fairly undramatic reunion.
Now, what's funny is the scene with the bear is the only scenes shot in L.A. because Bert the Bear, it has a name, couldn't travel.
It's in his contract. And is he the only trained bear in the world?
I don't know if he's the you only trained the right bear in the world, but you want to train the right bear. Yeah. So so they had to do Bert in that whole scene in L.A. So
they don't have the right kind of honey in his trailer. He walks.
Well, it's, you see the cast. You see the filming locations. You've got Iceland. You've got Dubrovnik. You've got all these exotic and then L.A. And it was just for Bert the Bear.
That's great. Yeah.
By the way, they filmed a scene where Cersei immediately dropped her pants and climbed up a tower, but then they just didn't show it.
So you've read further in the books.
Now, I one of the things I love about Jaime and Brienne is I love that scene where they're in the hot tub and he tells her about saving everybody in King's Landing from Aerys Targaryen and from what was Aerys Targaryen going to do? He was going to drop all the nasty
wildfire. He was going to burn down the entire city.
Yeah,
and he was going to kill.
So that's the very wildfire that Tyrion used. Yes.
That's exactly
forces.
Right. And it was beautiful, and she sees a whole other side of him, and he's been sort of antagonizing her the whole time, but finally he tells her, you know, why he's like the way he is. And I thought that was really nice. By the way, I meant to ask the book readers.
And you see his ball sack too.
Do we?
Yeah.
Is that your number four?
Wow. Wow. Say it loud, say it proud, Eric.
I think we just moved to no rating.
that may have been a male merkin. There has been great debate on
a ball merkin. Is there such a thing? Wow. Okay. So my question for you, the book readers, is has there ever been a book or has he ever gone into a lot of detail about the prehistory of and by he I mean George R. R. Martin, did he ever talk about the war that happened that we only hear about?
He treats it in pretty much the same way, which is you learn about it as the story develops little by little from people's recollections.
I see.
And from different points of view.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing is you do learn about it from different points of view, whether it was Robert and Ned's point of view or Jamie's point of view or others.
That's great, actually. Because that's the thing that the motor that drives everything is that pretty much.
One of the great things with this entire series is that there is a great deal of backstory that is fleshed out throughout the entire series, yet you're getting it bit by bit. And there are certain elements that even book readers still have no clue as to what happened in the past. And a lot of what happened in the past is going to inform much of what happens by the end. And we have no clue.
Two more books left, right?
Yes.
Yeah. One thing I think that in this case, I mean, often reading a book can detract, I think, from your enjoyment of a series. In this case, they've hewed pretty closely to it. Every once in a while, there might be something that bugs you as a book reader. But I think it really helps in this
series.
And
sometimes they even improve on the book, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I think without, at least judging from talking to other people, especially you, without having read the story, there's so much going on, it's hard to keep track of. You know, there's a lot of, who is that again? And
Yeah.
Oh, I've got
I feel like I'm in a history class sometimes.
Yeah, and I've got my guide. I mean, you're my guide, and I look over. It's probably so annoying how many times I look over at you and I say, wait, no, what? What?
It's positive.
Why is he saying this?
Okay, let's move on. I think it's your turn, right, David?
My number, whatever number
four,
we're on, is that there's actually a few good characters in this season, which is really unusual for the show. Like, I'd say the character mix is like 60% evil, 30% mixed, maybe 10% good. You know, a few Starks, but most of them have been killed off at this point.
Well, so who are they?
Bran, right? And I wasn't even counting him because Starks go without saying. But I would say Sam is a pretty unmixed good character.
Hodor.
And really, Hodor.
Who has the best, you know, he doesn't have to memorize his lines too hard.
Yeah, it's hard to say. He could actually be pulling the strings of the whole thing.
What about the guy who all the prostitutes love? What would you consider him?
Podrick Payne. Sir Pod.
Yeah. He's a Lannister. No Lannisters are unmixed good.
No.
The guy I like the most, both the actor and the character, is Ser Davos. The Onion Knight.
Mm-hmm.
He's
a goner.
Yeah, I mean, but he's a pretty straight-ahead guy. He tells it like it is. He's simple, and he's a good person. He cares about, you know, the people who cross his path. So
he's the one who doesn't like the red woman, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I just keep thinking he's a goner. And I think by now they've trained us to expect that people who are good like that are gone so much that they're like, haha, we're going to keep this guy alive just to mess with
yeah.
you.
He has a Ned Stark-like honorability to him,
yes.
which paints this giant target on yes, his forehead.
It's exactly.
Like, oh, right.
You're not long for this world.
But then she's like, yeah, you're right. You're going to need him. And like, oh man, those guys. What about Tyrion? Would you say mixed with him or good?
I would say mixed.
Okay. No!
He's a Lannister. You can never forget yeah, Tyrion is a
more,
Lannister.
I mean, he's definitely the best of that yes. lot. And I think he has a good heart
yeah.
overall. But
what has he
I
done?
Mean, he's
you, wouldn't,
one
you
thing.
Wouldn't trust him.
No.
Name one thing.
No, he's pretty clever, underhanded. And
no! He is clever and underhanded, but that's all to the better. He also is unbelievably moral. And
obviously, he's going to do something very evil in the book that you and I don't know about. No, I don't
know.
No,
they wouldn't do that to me. If they do that to me, I will so jump off the show. They can't do that to me. Do you hear me, producers? Do not
so
ruin
So if he becomes
Tyrion
a pedophile, then you're out.
I am so
Well,
out.
My God, his father is pushing him to be a pedophile, but he won't even do it.
How old is Sansa supposed to be?
14.
Nine.
No,
she
to be
looks
14.
Like she's 18.
I think I know. She's yeah. gotten gorgeous this season.
Oh my God, she's beautiful.
She's also like 5'10". I mean, she's taller than almost every other character.
Oh, she's funny. Gorgeous to look at. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Is
that it, David?
Eric?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, my number four was the fight between Beric Dondarrion and Sandor Clegane.
That was great.
That scene covered a lot of ground, whether people realize it or not. And of course, the main thing about it was you got to see Thoros of Myr bring Beric back. So you begin to see what the power of the Red God really is. And here, all these people talk about all their various gods, but R'hllor, the Red God... That dude's like actually showing up and doing stuff.
Yeah.
They brought this yeah. one guy back from the dead 6 different times. I mean, Sandor Clegane cleaved this dude from the shoulder down to his heart. And he's just, boom, back. Hey, how's it going? At the same time, you also get Sandor the Hound managing to kind of clear his name somewhat. Yes, he killed Micah, but it was under orders, and everything he's done is under orders. And again, as David was talking about earlier, this is another one of those instances of a very multi-layered character where somebody that you've hated, you thought is some evil bastard, he's got like an ogre, he's got onion, you know, he's got layers, it's like an onion, where there's so much more to Sandor Clegane than anything else. And the one thing the Hound lives for is to kill his brother more than anything else. He doesn't care about anything else. But as you pointed out, he's been awesome to Sansa. He's been great to Arya. He's a decent fellow. Yes, he's a murderous bastard kind of bad guy. But underneath it, he's not a bad guy. So he's able to clear his name in trial by combat. But then we get to see more about Beric Dondarrion, who you did see in season 1, whether people realize it or not. And you just get to flesh out more about Thoros of Myr. You get to flesh out more about the Red God. So much is covered in that fight. And it was one of the very few fights you actually get to see on screen.
Right.
With a flaming sword.
Right,
and
right.
And he hates flames. He hates fire.
So I'm really puzzled about what the whole Red God thing is going to be about. It being somebody who hasn't read books 2 and 3, I don't understand what the Red God is. I know that the Red God is showing up all over the place.
Sure.
But
well, and as you point out, the Red God is we've seen acting directly.
Yeah.
So to bring Lord Beric back to life and birthing the unholy child,
smoke
that
baby,
murdered Renly, mm-hmm. right? The smoke baby,
smoke baby.
But it's interesting in that the old gods, the 7 that we keep hearing about, we haven't seen them do anything directly.
No,
but somehow things seem to come home to roost to various characters. Like yeah. a prayer will get said, or some reference will be made to the gods don't like this, and then a while down the road, payback just seems to happen. So they might be acting a little bit more in the background.
It's sort of like the Force. The dark side is more active, and you see lightning yeah. bolts and stuff, and the light side is a little more meditative and contemplative yeah. in general, you know? Okay, we're on number three, right?
My number three is Marjorie Tyrell. Mm. I love Natalie. she's beautiful, right? Yes. Played by Natalie Dormer, and she is gorgeous. She's the future queen of Westeros, and she knows how to play the game. You get the feeling?
She knows how to play Joffrey.
She knows how to play Joffrey and Cersei.
I like it when she was like stroking his crossbow.
I didn't know she was stroking his crossbow.
I don't know. With Cersei, I think she was a little shocked at Cersei's venom
when she
tried to befriend her.
And when she explained what the reigns of
Castamere
meant.
Yeah, that was kind of Cersei telling her, hey, this is the big leagues. You're out of your league.
Yeah. I don't think she is, though. I think that Marjorie can play in the big leagues. And I
think she's doomed.
I don't think... I don't know. She's really smart. I think she can rule the entire kingdom. She seems smart and she seems sassy. And she also has, I have to
Ned
say...
Ned Stark. Oh, you're right. He wasn't as smart as her.
I also have to say she gets points for being kind to Sansa. And she has the most awesome of all grandmothers, Lady Olenna, who's played by Diana Rigg.
You're right. I think she's in some ways one of the most amazing characters because, well, she seems like a good person, but she knows how to play the game. But it makes me wonder. I mean, she's also helping the unfortunate people in the city.
Yeah.
So she has good. But I always wonder with
her. She's doing that for a reason.
Is she? Yeah. She's just using all this as stepping stones.
She's very politically savvy.
Yeah, yeah.
She knows what she's doing.
Are you watching Mad Men?
Yeah.
Bob Benson. She's like him.
Yeah, she is. I hope though that that she's savvier than Bob Benson. You know, Bob Benson.
He's not doing so bad for himself.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
I don't know. He tipped his hand pretty
Lady,
hard.
Lady Olenna, I mean, Diana Rigg, who was also in Doctor Who, one episode of Doctor Who, well as the only woman to ever marry James Bond.
Wow.
Her Majesty's Secret Service.
By the way, could you Diana listen Rigg. To her? I could listen to her all day. Just she just gives it to everybody, even Tyrion. I mean,
she's awesome.
Yeah, she
great dialogue for her.
Yeah. She rules. I love her. So
good delivery.
That's me. You?
Oh, hi. Jason referred to this sort of obliquely earlier from the Joffrey point of view, but I kind of like that. Tywin Lannister, who is really the evil mastermind behind just about all everything bad that goes on, is having so much problem with his kids. I mean, you know, he's having everybody killed right and left. Has the Starks, and he's pretty much taking care of all the Starks. But I mean, he can't deal with Tyrion. He can't deal with Cersei. He can't deal with Joffrey, who I guess is his grandchild.
Yeah.
What do you mean he's doing great? He's got them all right where he wants them. Yeah. They're not happy about it.
Yeah, kind of. But
they're doing what he says.
He just sent the king to bed
without his supper. He's got Tyrion marrying Sansa. Cersei marrying this other guy.
Such a great
Line he got him to marry her, but he didn't get him to go any farther than that.
That's so true. Far.
Well, yet.
Well, and but he's,
show him some porn.
He's not having an easy time. it's a struggle for him, and the struggle is his own family.
I mean,
it's like a statement
about
family.
He's surrounded by insufferable fools.
I mean, I honestly, and you know how evil he is, and all, but there's some instances where I kind of feel some sympathy for him. Like, he's doing what he thinks he has to do for his family, and he's just kind of beleaguered on all
sides. And they're all ungrateful. I've never thought of it that way, but now that you mention it.
Well, I need to give some credit to Charles Dance for portraying Tywin Lannister so well. I mean, that character just drips with malevolence every single time he comes on screen. Yeah. And if you go back to season one, the first time we meet him, we met him when he's talking to Jaime while he is skinning a deer.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even blink. He has no problem with that. This is a guy who has no problem getting his hands dirty. He has absolutely no problem doing what needs to be done in order to win this war and in order to keep power.
But the part where they're at Harrenhal with Arya, he's not completely unsympathetic in those conversations because he's smarter than most of the rest, and he's not mindlessly bloody.
No,
he's bloody
not.
Only when it's necessary.
But he also does that, and we get to see that side of him only because Arya is this little servant girl, and he can talk to a little servant girl like that because she's insignificant and doesn't matter, which was a nice little tweak from the original storyline where that never happened in the books as far as Arya and Tywin being together. But it gives us such wonderful insight into the way Tywin works. And what a bastard.
I mean, it's hard for me to feel sympathetic towards him after. He was pretty much the mastermind behind the whole Red Wedding, right?
Well,
yeah.
He yeah. made that happen.
He did.
And it's like, but that's...
Well, and the other real big bad guy that people didn't know was for the good of the family, guy right? is Roose Bolton. And the Bolton clan, together with Tywin, they're just badasses. These are some bad, bad, bad people.
Yeah, and we should get to that.
I'm yeah, one sure thing will. I felt the show did not do a good job of was explaining how big a transgression it was to offer hospitality and then kill the guests.
Right. But they showed the bread and salt.
But that's only for people who read the books.
That was book readers.
But they didn't make a big deal out of it.
And the whole idea of that was once you break bread and have salt with a guest, they are under your protection and there's nothing bad that can happen with them. Right. But we're
right, and that's such a powerful...
I've read about that, yeah. It's
such a powerful right in that culture that is the what enabled them to relax enough and be in their company without thinking that was going to happen.
Even though they all looked pretty... Well, they didn't all look worried, but the mother looked pretty worried. A lot of... She kept looking around.
Well, she knew when that door closed and that song started playing.
Yeah. It was the song. Right. Well, it was the song.
Let's talk about this. This is... Is it my turn?
Nothing's mine, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, we're getting there. We're getting to that scene.
Do it.
My number three is actually Jamie and Bran, as you've already brought up. Specifically, I wanted to point out, especially for this podcast with the Walking Dead cast and all, the very Rick-like quality of having a hand lopped off. Now, this goes into the comic books.
He looks more like I thought Rick would look on the screen, just his face and his hair and everything.
Yeah, he's got a comic book Rick thing going on. Having Jamie lose his hand, and it wasn't really pounded into people's head that was his sword hand. That's a very important thing to him.
He
was his sword.
He looked like very deflated.
Oh, his sword hand. But the relationship with he and Brienne, it was already well on its way to becoming better once he loses the hand. And then once he goes back for her out of a sense of honor, out of a sense of nobility, and just out of a general sense of decency, their relationship is absolutely one of my favorites, and it's always been one of my favorites in the books. It's been one of my favorites in the show. I think it leads him to move away from the evil Prince Charming into this nuanced, very multi-layered character that we just didn't get at the beginning. The other thing I want to say about that is the moment he loses the hand to it's not Vargo Hoat. What's his name? Locke. The character of Locke in the story is the one who chops off his hand. And then kicking right into the Hold Steady's version of The Bear and the Maiden Fair was phenomenal. A punk rock song right after that. It was such a jarring sort of like, whoa, he just lost his hand, and wow, suddenly I'm listening to this punk song, which is just awesome.
I think that was the name of the episode, The Bear and the Maiden Fair.
The Bear and the Maiden Fair was the one with the bear. So it was a little bit later that they named it that.
Oh, okay.
But the song, there are two main songs in the entire Song of Ice and Fire universe. The Reigns of Castamere, which is a dour song that we all know now where that's related to. And The Bear and the Maiden Fair, which is a ribald, basically a sex song. The song is dirty. If you actually listen to it, it's filthy. To end the Jamie thing, getting his hand lopped off with the Hold Steady doing that was brilliant. And I loved it. And end of story. That's it.
That's great.
Loved
it's very the show's very artfully done in a lot of ways, and the music that they pick for the end is often perfect. Sometimes it's completely silent.
Yeah.
There was one time
like Breaking Bad does that too.
Yes, they do.
The one time that it was completely silent that I know of is at the end of the Red Wedding.
Yeah, that might be the only
and
time.
And that's I want to launch into the Red Wedding because that was my it was I'm going to move it to my number 2, but it's actually my number 1. I didn't know it was coming. And
me neither. I knew something was coming.
Although I did too. Although looking back on it, I probably should have because there were clues. It was devastating. And in fact, afterwards, I told David, I was crying, and I told David, I'm quitting the show. I'm not going to watch it anymore.
Did you really mean it?
I did.
You did.
I did. I'm like, that's it. If they kill all people who I love, I can't trust them. I can't watch all the people I love get killed. This is terrible. And David was so sweet to me. He was like, oh, it's okay. He was really nice. Anyway.
That is cool. I got to learn from you. My first thought was, well, did you watch season 1?
I know,
episode 9.
I didn't care about Ned. About Ned like I cared about Catelyn this young wedding couple. And Rob, you know, and Talissa.
I mean, Rob and Talissa, I talked about Game of Thrones when I did that other podcast, TV Times 3, and it was right after the episode where they were all lovey-dovey and talking about their... kid coming up and stuff, and it was just nice. And I'm like,
can't have
you
that.
Know, something's going to happen to them. Like, yeah. even a, yeah. a sappy scene like that in Game of Thrones is tense because I know it means they're right. probably done for.
I mean, I knew that too, and but yeah, I still thought, no, they can't kill off these guys. I mean, he is representing half of the show, basically. Yeah. He is.
It's like Tywin won now. That,
yeah,
I mean, except, Stannis
except,
is left.
Except but. Now, I'm putting my cards behind Daenerys. Somebody else. Right. So, and one thing that's really funny, I read that there is somebody who tweeted, remember when your geeky friends were really sad that time 13 years ago? This is why.
I read the same tweet.
That's hilarious. What if in season four, the first episode, Daenerys gets like her head chopped off?
I will tell David. I'll cry and I'll tell David, that's it. I'm quitting the show.
And you'll mean it this time.
And I'll mean it this time. I really was shocked and I was so incredibly sad. I mean, and especially because the look on Catelyn's face when she sees her firstborn son. There he is, and he's crying over his true love. There she is on the floor with his undead child inside her. And she's the cry she lets out is the pain,
heartbreaking.
The pain of the universe. And,
it's miserable.
And then she gets her throat cut, and you think, thank God, because she couldn't live.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I thought was great about that scene is that it's long. Yeah. Like, it's not like a scene where they shock you and end the show.
It's slow.
It's like, yeah, but attack, it's like initial attack happens and then you have to like suffer with them.
Oh no, they let it let it linger.
And the slow thing is like first they close the doors.
Yeah.
Then the band strikes up.
Yeah. And then she reaches for the sleeve and realizes there's chainmail under it.
But even before that, the king guy, what's his name? The leader. He's like just railing on
Walder Frey.
Frey. And he's like just being totally vulgar towards him. And you think, or
that's
at least
not appropriate.
Partly I'm thinking the optimistic part of my brain is, okay, this is the lashing that he's going to get.
Right. Yeah. This is it. Yeah. It's not going to get any worse than this.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's just where it starts. And
what's the line? He says something like, when I was younger, I would have broken that oath 500 times for a pair of high tits and a tight fit, I think is what he said.
That's classy. Keep it classy.
Stay classy, Frey. Walder Frey.
But that was brilliant because it does make you think, okay, if he was going to do something to them, maybe he would try to pretend to be nice so that he could lull them into a sense of security. But it's all this weird psychology where it's like, nope. He was actually being very vulgar to make you think that they were going to be safe.
That was the worst of it.
And then when they parade Rosalind Frey out to show Edmure, this is your wife.
Right.
She's hot. She's not one of my many, many ugly daughters. And the look he gives Rob of, you could have been banging this. You know.
By the way, one of the greatest scenes in this whole show is when they're having the funeral and Edmure is supposed to light the boat on fire. And he can't. He's bad at shooting arrows. And finally,
the blackfish just walks up.
Like, was that in the book?
Yes.
It was.
It was.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And the way the blackfish hands the bow over without even looking.
Yeah,
it's like,
he just
got
shoots
this.
The arrow and walks away.
I got this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the scene that came after, I think it was maybe even in the next episode, of Grey Wind's head on top of Rob's body, on top of the horse,
the wolf.
The dire wolf being paraded around, and for Arya to see that, it's breaking Arya. Little by little, she's being broken.
I will say, I was very surprised they did include that scene. I really was, only because it was never 100% sure that it actually happened, because it was always, again, in the books, always told kind of like when Arya came upon those people and they were telling the story.
Right.
That's the way it was always told, was third person through other people.
Right.
There was, in season two, what could have happened when Dany was in the Houses of the Undying and seeing all those visions when everything was going weird with her. One of the visions she sees was somebody with a king's wolf head on their body. When you read it the first time, you had no clue what the hell you were reading. If you had seen it on the show, it would have made too much sense and it would have been too much of a spoiler, which is probably why they excised it. To see it actually on the show was shocking, and I'm surprised.
Speaking of prophecies, the red woman, when she put the leeches on, what's his name?
Yeah.
I don't have the name
Gendry.
Gendry. And didn't she like curse three people?
Yes.
And one was
Rob. Balon Greyjoy, and the one from Gendry's
and Greyjoy is fucked up.
Joffrey.
Yeah, Joffrey. So, that's interesting to me.
That
but
is interesting.
The thing I hate about this season the most, and I've heard of other complaints, is having to watch poor Theon be tortured episode after episode. Come on, I don't want to see.
Okay, well,
idea.
Again, I know we're trying to avoid any kind of book discussion, but I want to say, in book two. You're left with the impression that he's dead. Theon is dead. You don't find out any of this information until book five.
Oh, wow. Oh.
They have pushed forward certain storylines in a very big way.
I'm glad because people complain that books, I guess it's
four and five, four
covers certain characters that are not a lot of people care about, and five is back to the ones we do. And so I'm sure they won't do that with a show. They'll keep going back and forth.
But the thing is, in many events that occurred in books four and five are in fact concurrent with what's going on now.
Right.
Which is why the storylines are now being bled a little bit, and it's interesting. I think they spent, personally, I think they spent way too much time with the Theon torture stuff.
Yeah.
They could have pushed it back a little bit further, and also...
Plus they didn't have to show...
They
as much of it as
that.
They did.
Yeah, and maybe it might have been more effective with less.
Yes,
I think it would have been. I mean, with the exception of I can finally say Ramsay Snow, you know, diddling the sausage was maybe one of the funnier scenes of the whole thing. But
for her.
Right. It was like, the original scene of it was great, where he escaped and...
Uh-huh. That was great.
And
that
you
was
think great. Ramsay was helping him escape, and then it was like, he's like, hey.
Okay, where are we?
David?
Okay.
Number two.
My number two is the development of Dany, and so we've seen her fake out the slave master when she took over the Unsullied and then betray them. She's gotten very clever and ruthless both. But I really, and concealing that she speaks the language and all that stuff. But the later part where she's dealing with the Second Sons and Jorah Mormont and Barristan Selmy are trying to advise her and kind of tell her what's what, you know, sort of like, hey, little lady, we'll tell you how to handle this.
Right.
And she basically says, shut up, I'm handling it and you work for me. And she handles it.
She does.
Yeah. So she has become a
force to be reckoned
with. Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
The one thing about this is, isn't it kind of convenient that she comes across this one land that's so easy to conquer because you make a deal to buy the slaves and then you kill and take your payment back. And then she goes to another place that happens to have, I mean, it just seems very convenient how she's been able to amass this force. Now, on the other hand, I mean, I've been wanting her to do that because I want to see her come in and try to take the throne back, but it feels too convenient.
I think all of these cities are surrounding something known as Slaver's Bay.
So there is
they're all slave cities, and so
it's that part of the world where, so if the Dothraki are one of the forces there, they don't have these weapons at their disposal. They're not going to be clever and political and
it just
magical
seems like
and
a flaw,
all those things.
A flaw in the system that you could have this whole army of Unsullied that anyone with enough money could come and buy and then kill you and take the money back.
But not anybody. The person who can do it is the person who has three dragons.
Right, or however much money it would take to buy those, because he does offer to sell them for the right amount of money. So if you were a rich person, you could do it too.
Right.
Like tons and tons of gold or something like
but
that.
But I love that she basically makes the deal and then her dragons burn him to a crisp. And she's like, oh, well, you know what? He was a slave trader and I'm going to free all the slaves. And if you want to come with me, great.
Am I right in saying, by the way, that all three seasons ended with essentially the same shot? They all end with the dragons.
No, wrong. Season two ended with the White Walkers.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's right. Yeah. And what was the episode? But when she, so that was already in season three when the dragon flew through and that was the end credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the end of season one was the dragons hatching. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And the end of this season was.
And that's a lot of people were very disappointed with season or with episode 10 of this season because it did not end in some big supernatural way. And my take was, look, the Red Wedding was enough.
Yeah. They had their big,
come down.
The big shocker was the penultimate episode. And I think they did that on purpose because that was so upsetting to people. They didn't want to end on that.
And this was a cool scene to end with. But the thing I'm most worried about about is I've heard it feels like people's enthusiasm for the later books isn't as high as the first three. And now that we've had this Red Wedding, which, by the way, the two producers of the show said when they read that scene in the books, that's what made them want to do the show.
Fair enough.
And I'm like, okay, the scene that they really love the most is over now. So is it going to be as good?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
No, it will be.
Remember, two books haven't been written yet.
That's right. Now, I mean, when I first read it, I hit the Red Wedding and I had to set the book down for an hour. I just couldn't read anymore after that. It was way too upsetting.
Right?
And then I pick up the book again and it was an Arya chapter. And I'm reading through it and the Arya chapter ends with the Hound riding up behind her and knocking her in the back of the head with an axe. Now, they didn't say it was the blunt end of an axe. It just said, hits her in the head with an axe.
So you saw she was
dying. And I put the book down, and for 2 hours, I couldn't pick that book up again. And I went to Mrs. Blog, and I said, I did this to Arya. And she said, well, maybe. And I'm like, well, maybe he hit her with a blunt end. And she said, does that sound like the Hound? And I said, no. And I thought that was it. I thought Arya was dead. So 2 hours later, I then picked it up, and a few chapters later, here's Arya again. And I was like, oh, thank goodness.
Friend of mine said, every time anyone bugs George R. Martin that he's not writing fast enough, he kills a star.
even you know, Arya could turn out to be the most contemptible character in this whole thing by the time this is all over, what she's been through. But even George R. R. Martin, he I read that he got to that point in his writing of The Red Wedding, and then he just skipped the scene and wrote after it because he couldn't bear to write it, and then he came back and wrote it last or something like that.
Really?
It's rough, man. It's rough.
I thought they did a beautiful job filming it.
They did a remarkable job.
Those bastards.
All right, my number two, mirroring David. Obviously, the book readers are probably going to have the similar sort of things. Danny acquiring the Unsullied. Again, all of Danny's storyline, but that scene in particular of her getting the Unsullied and the way that she tricked that asshole was just fantastic. That she gets Missandei from him before doing anything. And here's one little tidbit I loved was the fellow who is behind the languages, the one who created the Dothraki language for the show, the one who's creating the Valyrian for the show. He created the two different versions of Valyrian that exist, High Valyrian and Low Valyrian. The Low Valyrian is known as Gaspari. When she said, dragons are not slaves, the word she used for slave was specifically in Low Valyrian, so he would know that she knew the difference. Now, us fans shouldn't know that, but the linguistic guy behind it was so detailed,
wow.
He made sure to put that in there. That's how intense the show gets behind what it's doing. The other thing I will mention about the whole Danny storyline is the introduction of Fabio Naharis, aka Dario.
Is his name really Fabio?
No, it's Dario Naharis. But that guy is awesome. And I don't know if you noticed the hilts of his swords, but they are two women.
He is always
fondling with his fingers his two ladies on the hilts of his sword.
That's awesome.
That guy is just walking, talking, sexual energy going on, and he is awesome, and I'm so happy they introduced him, and I'm happy they changed him from the novels, because in the novels he's got a tri-forked purple beard,
and
a gold tooth, and
there's
all these other things. So instead they made him look a little bit like more Fabio attractive. And more attractive, and he's a good foil, I think, to Danny's
I can't wait. I'm glad he wasn't killed.
No, he's far too handsome for.
Yeah. And he had the bag of heads for her.
He had the bag of heads.
Yeah.
This is sword hilts.
Valentine's Day.
I got a bag of heads.
Like you wouldn't appreciate a bag of heads. I would.
I mean, there are so many heads getting sent around in this show, like mailed to other people.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you got for Father's Day, but I don't know what you got for Father's Day. Oh God, the penises.
Penis somebody, in a box.
Somebody
a
should
dick
start,
in a box.
Somebody should start a company there called HeadX.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Market for this service. Okay, who's next?
I am, but we've already talked about the Daenerys Targaryen. So, Dany, she was She's mother of favorite. Dragons, free of slaves, hottest of the would-be sitters of the Iron Throne.
Wow, you said it better than
fair enough.
I don't think that's how it goes
in
the show.
I've always loved her character, and this season I started to feel like, wow, she's getting really brutal. But she's always, she's for the slaves, and she tells them, you know, you can leave if you want to. I don't know. I feel like she has potential to be just as
ruthless
mm-hmm. in a way that's not cool as any of the other leaders.
She might, but I love the fact that she's all about freeing the slaves, and she's got dragons. And
I wish if she would, when she said, "If any of you want to leave." And then they all, okay, and they all leave.
We're going to go back to our islands.
Yeah. We like, too, how long her titles have gotten.
Yeah.
Yes.
It takes like 30 seconds to announce her now.
Now yeah. It sure does. Yeah, I love her.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. So my number one is Roose Bolton.
Yeah. And,
so here's a character who I think embodies more than any other really the cutthroat nature of the game. He really, most of the show up until now has been, I think, a minor character. Mm-hmm. He hasn't even come up that often. He was one of the right-hand men of Rob in the war, and you know he's a big lord up north. But you don't pay that much attention to him. And he is very smart, but he is all about ruthless self-interest. And the second the wind is blowing where it's smarter to be on Tywin's side, for his own benefit, for what the power he's going to mass up north, he switches sides like that. And he's sitting with Catelyn at the Red Wedding. He's got a deadpan face, but kind of smiles at her, but he's so cold. He's the one wearing the chainmail and the one that does the deal. And I think the character is being written and acted very well, and it is the really the archetype of a character who could succeed in this world.
And what was really cool is if you notice every time Rob and Talisa were having any sort of nice romantic moment together throughout all of season 3 and even the end of season 2, Roose would just appear.
Yeah.
And he was always there.
Mm-hmm. But what about the fact that you would want to trust, you say the archetype of a character who could succeed. I guess if you change sides too much, then no one's going to trust you.
No, that's true. But he kind of picked the right moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He played it cool, but he is very... I'm not saying he's a good character. He's not.
No.
He's not sympathetic. But he's very, effective. Very clever, ruthless, and practical about everything he does. You know, one of the things he says is true. If Rob had taken his advice a couple times, Rob would have been a lot better off. And his advice was ruthless, practical advice, but he's right.
This is the first time I've ever really thought, you know, maybe Rob shouldn't have married this girl. And
they'd both still be alive.
Yeah, like our modern notions of if you love someone, you should marry them are not appropriate here.
Well, Rob made a couple of mistakes. I mean, one of them was marrying Talisa as opposed to one of the Freys. The other one was killing of Lord Karstark. I think that pushed Roose into that direction as well, although things were already in play. I mean, not to mention the fact
that's two major mistakes.
And Roose had also sent his bastard son to go take care of the Greyjoy problem in Winterfell.
Right.
You know, that was Roose. And that's what's been one of the greatest things is Roose has managed to fly under the radar throughout this entire series. Right. Yet now it's coming into clear focus that he's one of the flat-out villains.
Right, well, and it becomes clear in the Red Wedding that
the
whole time you think it's Walder Frey that betrayed them. And he did.
He did.
And it was his setting and his castle and his soldiers. But you realize at the end of that episode that Roose was really the one. He was the one behind it. Like it, just like Godfather 1, it wasn't really the Tattaglias. It was really Barzini.
And this is also where... Nice analogy. I like that. And also you go back to where when Roose was allowing Jaime to go back to King's Landing, Jaime says to him, "Give my regards to Robb Stark."
Yeah.
When he kills Robb Stark, he says the Lannisters send their regards.
Yeah.
This was all one big power play, and Roose knew, all right, I'm going to let Jaime go.
What a dick.
Because he's already working with Tywin at that point. At this point, the Ravens have been flying. They're all been... You know, their raven mail is active.
I mean, in defense of Roose, and wow, I seem to be sympathetic towards all the villains. I'm not trying to make him a sympathetic character, but I think part of his calculation was the Starks can't get it done. They're not dedicated enough. They're not ruthless enough. Right. He saw that they're not going to win.
And they're not playing the game.
Yeah.
And you get that in season 1.
Yeah. And he's right. The smart thing to do is if you want to be a player is to play the way he's playing.
Who did Roose marry? He married the one Frey that was worth her weight in silver.
A fatty.
So he got the fattest Frey he can get. There's Roose Bolton in a nutshell.
Right. He did not care about anything personal there. It was totally a play for
him. Give me your fattest daughter.
That's it, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. He's kind of the Tywin of the North in that way.
Okay, let's move on to the number ones.
Oh, my number one. Oh, wait.
That was my number one.
That was, I think we're on the number ones. Yeah, I'm the last here. And my number one was generically the Red Wedding. We've already covered that. I mean, there was so much to cover with the Red Wedding. It was actually, I loved Karen's email right after you did finally see it, which was, I think, just damn.
Yes, I think you summed it up.
Damn. I was really expecting a fuckity fuck fuck. Oh, Robb Stark. Oh, no, why? Fuck. But no, we end up with damn. That's fine, too. The Red Wedding. I mean, for those of us who knew it was coming, this is the one thing that
you don't know how hard it was to not say anything about that for 3 years.
3 years. We've been biting our tongue.
Good job, you guys.
I'm impressed. I should have dropped you a hint.
Don't get too attached to Rob.
I kept hearing something's coming and, you know, this season, but no details.
No. I will elaborate on the one really brutal thing that surprise those of us book readers. And again, I hate to do this in the book, whatever. Yes, exactly. Because Jane Westerling, the actual wife of Robb Stark, they're smart enough to say, you know, that'd be a real insult to bring your wife to this thing. Let's keep her out of the wedding.
And he doesn't bring her in the book.
Now, he does bring her in the show, as we all know. And now Talisa got a belly full of knife. Una Chaplin, the woman who played her, does show up in an episode of Sherlock, by the way. So
she's beautiful. She's got a real unusual beauty.
Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter. Yeah, Una Chaplin is Talisa.
Oh.
And that, to me, was probably the most brutal part of that. To see a pregnant woman being jabbed in the belly is a little rough.
Why?
and the look on her face, like
it's horrible. It's horrible. And then the look that scream cat gives out as she then slices the throat of the Frey wife, and then the way the man casually comes up and slits her throat. I mean, the Red Wedding was probably one of the most impactful, powerful moments of TV I've ever seen.
So. When it ended, too, Jenny and I just sat there, much like when Ned Stark died in season one, man, this is a drag.
And there's no music. It's so quiet. I was just, after that, I just said to David, I'm not doing it. If he's going to kill off everyone,
So what changed your mind?
Time passed.
Whatever.
Whatever.
No, I mean, I'm glad the show fearlessly does this. It's one of the things I like about The Walking Dead that I think is starting to go away, but you never know who's going to be around.
I also gave Karen an assurance. Can I say it?
Yeah, do it.
I told her nothing worse than that happens later.
Okay.
Now, I can't imagine.
That's not fair.
I can't imagine.
That's not fair.
I can't. Well, because to me, I can't imagine anything worse than that.
But I got to say, the next episode.
Okay, yeah, an honorable mention has to go to the. We didn't even touch on.
I don't
think
so, because whatever happens later, your innocence is completely gone.
Yeah, my innocence is completely gone. But wait a second. Then Ygritte, he breaks up with her and says, "Baby, you knew who I was when you got into this thing." And
she did.
Fine, you're crow. You know nothing, Rob Snow.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, whatever.
Lard.
So then she fills him full of arrows, and I said to David, I said, "You told me nothing bad was gonna happen."
He didn't say that.
Nothing bad was gonna happen.
You said nothing as bad as that.
No, I said nothing worse.
Well, Jon Snow was gonna be my worse.
That's worse than the Red Wedding?
Yes.
Because he's hot.
No, because he's the bastard child, and his heart is really pure.
He's a bastard child.
Yeah, he's had a rough time.
His heart is pure.
Yeah.
Was that like a...
He gave her the Lard's kiss. Yeah. It's not that pure.
And when I saw that he wasn't... Dude,
okay, maybe, so I was wrong.
I was thinking, oh, she just passed right by him, or he just passed right by her and he was going to leave her there. I thought maybe some women watching that, and I had a little bit of this too, was like, get him. He fucked you over.
No way. She was annoying.
She's nasty.
What? Annoying? What?
Well, see, now I got to say, David and I have had this talk.
She's from in the book, Downton Abbey, she's, by the way.
In the book. Yeah, I know. She was like one of the maids.
In the book,
they flesh out the relationship a lot more, and you really believe in the relationship. Correct me if I'm wrong here, of John and Ygritte. But in the show, she just seems like
I would disagree a little bit, because in the book, I get the sense that it's like, I like boning you, Jon Snow, so let's stay together. But as opposed to the show, which is all like love. Bone. I mean, the love thing in the show, I think, was pampered much more. They never had any moment.
Okay, 141's also going at the end. I like boning you. Okay, let's move along. All right, anything else you guys want to say about season 3? Overall, amazing season, right? Loved it. Can't wait to see next. I hope it stays as good as it has been. Yeah, glad to have you guys on who can keep all the names straight and everything.
You know nothing, Jason Habas.
I don't know anything. Oh, I'm a maid and I'm pure and fair. I'll never dance with a hairy bear. I call the night, but you're a bear. All black and brown and covered in hair. He lifted her high in the air. He stepped and roared and he smelled it there. She kicked and wailed, the maid so fair. All right, we're back in, and it's time for news about Game of Thrones.
Okay, the first item is from Entertainment Weekly. It says that writer George R.R. Martin is determined to finish Book 6, The Winds of Winter, by 2016. And this is pretty important to book readers because by the end of this upcoming season, which, you know, Season 5, the TV show will pretty much be caught up to the books. Martin said having The Winds of Winter published before season 6 airs next spring has been important to me all along. I wish it was out now. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic about how quickly I can finish, but I canceled 2 convention appearances. I'm turning down a lot more interviews and anything I can do to clear my decks and get this done.
I guess it's a good sign. You know, when you start taking practical actions like that, then maybe that means that you're really buckling down, you know?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, but then I have this bit of, you know, seemingly contradictory news about Martin clearing his schedule in that.
Oh, right.
Yeah. In that same interview, he revealed that he was working on another series for HBO, tentatively titled Captain Cosmos. At the dawn of the age of TV in 1949, a visionary young writer creates a science fiction series that tells stories no one else will dare tell. So there's not much news about it yet, but I thought it was pretty amusing.
They were saying that, I don't know how they got this, but one thing I read said that it might be kind of Twilight Zone-y, which I think would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I love Twilight Zone. Yeah. And if he's got the magic touch, then, you know, we would definitely have to check it out. But yeah, he's like, I promise I'm going to finish and I have a TV show.
Yeah. In like the same interview.
I know. And I'm opening a restaurant. So, you know what though? After last week when we found out or just, you know, talked about how they've sort of given up on the idea that the books will finish before the show, then that just sort of matters a lot less to me. When he finishes, just as the only thing I care about is that he finishes at some point.
But I think it's different for you because you're not a book reader. I think it's the book reader. Totally, the book readers are the ones that want him to finish. And, you know, if he does stick with this deadline, then, you know, like I said, only the last book will be, you know, spoiled. So it just kind of depends on where you come down on the whole thing. I don't think it really bothers me.
Even though I'm not a reader of the books, there is just some. I definitely want him to finish. I don't want him to die before he finishes. It just, I don't like the idea of somebody else finishing it up for him, you know? I feel pretty strongly about that.
If that happened, at least he does have that big outline. So it would be his ideas. But yeah, I completely agree with you. He needs
that. Is true. I mean, maybe because there's a TV show, then that spurred him to write more detailed outlines. So the story will be saved no matter what. Whereas if they didn't have the TV show, and this is really morbid, but he ended up dying before he finished the books, then maybe it would just be lost, you know?
He totally hates when people talk about that too.
I know. I feel bad, but hey, it's the fucking reality.
Yeah, it's happened. I guess. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, one of the series that I was a reader of that I loved is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended on the last book that Douglas Adams did was really depressing. And it came out later that he was depressed when he wrote it. And he really wanted to write another one to kind of make up for it. But then he died. And so I was bummed.
Oh, I don't want to laugh at that, but
I know. It's really sad because those books, I don't think you'd like them. They're too zany, but
they're pretty brilliant. At least the first one, I think, and watched the movie.
Yeah, the movie was pretty good.
I wanted to mention one other little thing for people who may not have discovered it yet. This HBO's viewer guide, I just thought it's a really wonderful resource for viewers, you know, just to use to refresh your memories on the characters between seasons or whatever, and the houses and the histories. And I wanted to point it out because it's especially good for viewers who have not read the books. You know, I said you'd be really careful on the internet, but this is show specific, and you can choose to dig into references by episode. So even if you're not up to date, you know, you won't have to worry about avoiding spoilers and whatnot.
It's all
so
safe. Huh? You can really control the what information you get.
Yes. So if you're not a book reader, it's a really good resource, but you can find the guide at Game of Thrones on HBO.com.
I just saw that today. I'm going to have to go catch up before we get into season 5 so I can refresh myself on everything.
Yeah. Each day on Facebook, they've been putting out a little bio highlighting each little different character and everything. And that's from that viewer's guide.
Right on. All right. Anything else?
Nope. That's all.
Okay. Let's move on to Raven's calls. We got one email. This is from our friend, James Skylunas. Hey, James. He says, hi, Jason and crew. I know I'm probably writing this after the recording of the Game of Microphones premiere. Yep. But I wanted to send you my congratulations and my thanks for putting this podcast together. You're welcome. I found Walking Dead cast in early season 3 and have spent 3 grand years listening to you and Karen. I found other good Walking Dead podcasts, but nothing as good as yours. Oh, I don't usually read praise, but I only got one email this week. So, it's really nice. Thank you so much. With my interest in podcasts buoyed by you, I went searching for a similar podcast for Game of Thrones to no avail. I sampled well over a dozen. All had their upsides, but none of them had the same feeling that your podcast do. You ruined podcasts for me, I guess. But now you come to your own rescue. I was thrilled when you announced Game of Microphones, and I'm really, really looking forward to hearing your work over the coming months. I have a group that I watch Game of Thrones with, and I plan on hooking them all on Game of Microphones as well. And no pressure, right? Just kidding. He says, a haiku for you. Like all else in this series, it took 5 years to produce Game of Mics. Yeah, totally. I mean, we've kind of been doing this podcast already since the beginning, but we've just done one episode per year. That's all. He says, good luck, James from Portland.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, man. That was really sweet.
And next time I want to see two Gracie and crew. Just kidding. No, that was a nice
I'll write
email.
That one. You'll
write it. So sweet.
Cool. Let's move on to book talk.
Well, as we mentioned in the last episodes, the Game of Thrones TV series stays pretty faithful to the books. Most of the changes are to, you know, mainly simplify the story or reduce the number of characters introduced or make some plot points really obvious. And I don't know, it's a really big task to detail each and every change. So I just thought I'd pick a few to mention.
So you're talking about differences between season 3 and then the books, right?
Yes, differences between season 3 and the books. But one of the changes I really enjoyed, and this is kind of a small one, but it was the expansion of Gendry's character. Now, Gendry is the unacknowledged, or one of the many unacknowledged bastard sons of Robert Baratheon. And in the TV series, Gendry takes over Edric Storm's role from the books. They have just a completely different bastard son at Dragonstone with Stannis. And so, but I really liked Gendry. So I like that he has kind of, they've kind of blended his role with Edric's. The next one I have is Sir Barristan Selmy introducing himself to Daenerys under different circumstances that of the book. In the book, he uses this false identity, and I assume they didn't do this in the TV series because viewers would just recognize him immediately. It's stated in the books that he does this because he wants to assess Daenerys' character before committing himself to her. And also in the book, he was with this other character that hasn't been introduced yet, and I'm not sure if the character will ever appear, but he was a favorite of mine, so I kind of hope he pops up. You know, I think it's still a possibility that he could pop up in season 5. So we'll see. Another change that I thought I'd mention was the interaction between Arya Stark and Tywin Lannister. When Arya and friends arrive at Harrenhal in the books, she has a variety of jobs, but eventually becomes cupbearer to Roos Bolton, whereas in the show, it's Tywin Lannister. And I'm not sure of the reasonings behind this, since Roos Bolton had already been introduced by this point. But, you know, I thought maybe it was just to give more screen time to Charles Dance, who plays Tywin, which is just a joy to watch.
The relationship between the two of them, they had really good on-screen chemistry. It would have been interesting to see how she would have interacted with Roos, too. But, yeah, Charles Dance is awesome.
Yes, he rocks. And he has really, like, they introduced Tywin Lannister much, you know, right away in season 1, basically, where he comes into the story a little later in the books. So, but anymore, Charles Dance is a good thing, in my opinion. Okay, the last one I wanted to mention is that in the TV series, Robb Stark's wife was present at the Red Wedding, whereas in the book, she's not present. In the TV series, Talisa was killed by being stabbed in the stomach. I don't think anybody could forget that. But this didn't even happen in the books. And actually, Talisa takes the place of a character named Jane Westerling. And the entire story of Robb's wife was changed completely, because I think, you know, Robb's not a point of view character in the book, and we kind of only hear of his marriage after it's already taken place. And, you know, I think they wanted to tell the love story, maybe give a little more reasoning as to why he went back on his word about marrying Walder Frey's, one of his many daughters.
Does it seem like the TV show is a little more romance and love centered, and the book is a little more cold about those things?
Yeah, I think you could say that.
Like the relationships tend to be more practical, or I don't know. I just get the feeling from what I hear that it's not quite as romantic, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it that way, but you're probably right.
Oh.
So, but that is all I have for the comparisons.
Awesome. All right, that's our show, episode 2. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. If you'd like to write in to us, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check us out on our website at gameofmicrophones.com and podcastica.com.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And remember, if you see anyone wearing chainmail at a wedding, run away.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long.
Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.